Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Did you know that you can explore the foundations of classical education with a dynamic online community? A one-year program, the Circe Atrium explores the foundations of Christian classical education with online classes and discussions. The Atrium now features 5 courses. Participants can choose one course or any combination. These courses include Heidi White on classical pedagogy, Andrew Kern on classical rhetoric, Matt Bianco on Plato's Republic, and Wes Callahan on the Divine Comedy or the Iliad. Through exclusive live webinars and online discussion, the Atrium offers a forum for contemplation and collaboration, a place to linger and take pleasure in the depths of the Christian classical tradition alongside like-minded fellow educators. We provide the platform. You bring the desire for wisdom and virtue. Together, we make the community. To learn more, head over to CirceInstitute.com/atrium.
Welcome back to the Weight of Fatherhood podcast. This is your host, Brian Phillips. Thanks for joining me for another episode. Also joining me today is Christopher Wiley. He is a senior contributor to the Imaginative Conservative, a pastor in Vancouver, Washington, and he's written both fiction and nonfiction alike, some nonfiction writings appearing in Touchstone Magazine, Relevant Magazine, and Modern Reformation. And his books include The Purloined Boy, which was a book one of The Weirdling Cycle, Man of the House, which we'll talk about a little bit in this episode, and The Household in the War for the Cosmos, which is the focal point of the episode today. So looking forward to this. Christopher, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks a lot, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
As I mentioned, you've written both fiction and nonfiction. And your nonfiction so far has focused on family life predominantly, right? So why has that been a focal point for your writing so far?
Well, I think there's a range of reasons. One of those reasons is personal. I came from a broken home. That's not news. I mean, lots of people do these days, but it gave me something to think about. And when I became a father, first of all, of course, a husband, then a father, I was interested in thinking about what it meant to be those things. So that's what prompted it. But, more broadly, there's obviously sort of a cultural tsunami that we're, experiencing right now with regard to a kind of a washing away of traditional understandings of households and families. And so there's a lot of question begging in when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I wanted to kind of get back to, I guess you could say, the sources, I can put it that way, with regard to what are the things that help to bring about our traditional understanding of households and families, and were they really passé or, moribund or oppressive, or how that all runs. But there's a lot of people who say that that's the case, but don't actually have any knowledge of what the sources were that informed our understanding in the first place. So that played a big role. And then the more I dug into it, the more I saw how rich the sources were and just how little people knew about them. And so that went a long way toward encouraging me, to pursue this line of thought. And then I had a lot of people who I spoke to about these things and people whose opinions I respected, and they all encouraged me to just kind of go for it. So that's the story.
Yeah. Now, I believe your first book on the family was published, or family related matters anyway, it was in 2017, Man of the House.
Right.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about that work and your motivation behind that.
Well, there are a couple of things. One, it's my conviction that masculine virtues traditionally understood, you know, virtues as they are, you know, attributed to masculinity, find their expression within productive social institutions, not just merely, you know, male psychology or biology, although those things matter and they're important. But but most of the stuff that I saw was addressing masculinity through those lenses. You know, this is the way men are sort of constituted psychologically, or this is, you know, these are the interests that men have. And I wanted to look at things from within the framework of social institutions. I've got a background in philosophy. Aristotle has always been an important influence for me. And so beginning with him, I, you know, leapt into the sort of the understanding that, you know, the ancients had with regard to households. And before long, I found Xenophon's Oikonomikos and, you know, his treatment of households. You know, Xenophon was like Plato, he wrote Socratic dialogues. And in Oikonomikos, we basically have kind of a handbook in the first century, or actually, I think it was third or fourth century BC that he wrote that, for, you know, managing households. That's what the title gets at. Mm-hmm. And it was a bestseller, if you could say that. And those days, if they had Barnes and Nobles, it would have been right in the self-help section, right at the front, you know, like on the end, you know. Cicero translated it, so it was broadly distributed. Everybody knew about it, and I think it wasn't, you know, something that wasn't an original work in the sense that Xenophon dreamed all this stuff up. He was an observer, and he was more or less encapsulating or recapitulating or sort of restating kind of conventional wisdom about how households functioned and so forth. So that, along with reflections particularly on the New Testament household codes and some other people who had been influential for me, you know, people like Alan C. Carlson or Christopher Lash, mm-hmm. who had talked a lot about households and the functional aspects or the work that households once performed, all of that contributed to writing that book. So It's essentially Xenophon's Oikonomikos and the New Testament kind of mashed up in sort of my attempt to bring the classical understanding of the household into our time.
Yeah, and that's similar to your more recent work, which was published in 2019, The Household in the War for the Cosmos. And that particular work started as a conference talk, right? And you were encouraged to turn it into a book or develop it into a book by some pretty big names, right?
Yeah, Nancy Piercy and Tony Esselin and Glenn Stanton. And there were a bunch of people who were at the conference. I was honored to be a speaker there. It was the Touchstone Conference. I think it's 2018, maybe it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I gave that address. And that crowd was a really mixed bunch. I mean, you had Roman Catholics, Orthodox guys, you know, lots of Protestants, mostly Protestants in Reformed tradition. Right. But it was a great mashup. The talk went over really well. And so when Cannon came to me and said, "Hey, we'd like you to write a book, kind of a follow-up on Man of the House," I said, "Well, how about if I use this, the talk and succeed for the book?"
Yeah. So let's dive into that work in particular a little bit more. Now, the full title and subtitle, the Household in the War for the Cosmos, and then subtitle, Recovering a Christian Vision for the Family. When I first saw that, the title and subtitle, which was given to me, as I mentioned to you earlier, anyway, before we started recording, that I got it as a review copy at an ACCS conference. I was expecting sort of a standard book on the family, but when I started reading it, you take a decidedly different approach. You start with a discussion of piety. And I thought that sort of jumped out at me immediately. So tell us why piety is so important in thinking about the family.
Well, when you have the ancient understanding of piety, pius, you realize that it was essentially the glue that held society together at every level in the ancient world, for Christians as well as, you know, pagans. So the Greek term would be eusebio, meaning the same thing. Essentially, due regard to those who have been your benefactors. So parents, of course, you owe them a great deal. And so you owe them, you know, respect, affection, duty, you know, and honor and obedience. And the same thing is true with civic leaders and even upward, you know, as you climb the ladder up to the gods for pagans, but for Christians, obviously the one true God. But when you understand piety in that and sort of in the way the ancients did as duty, then it very clearly applies not just strictly to God, but to all human authorities and beginning with the household. And, you know, that's not the way people generally think of piety today, if they even use the term. If, you know, today, most people would substitute, you know, a personal relationship with Jesus, you know, for what, you know, maybe Christians would have referred to as piety 100, 200 years ago. Right. But anyway, so that's why I started there.
And that's, I guess that's another example of what we see with a lot of ideas, that when they become an ism, right, that's when it really becomes a problem, right? It changes the nature of the thing, you know. And so pietism is very different than piety itself in the original understanding anyway.
Let me just follow up on that, because it's a great point which to make a contrast. Pietism is almost entirely inward. You know, piety in the ancient world was largely outward. It was a social virtue, not strictly a sort of inner virtue.
Right. Now, and you've alluded to this already, but I'd like for you to sort of unpack this a little bit more. You're casting a Christian vision for the family. That's the sort of the subtitle of this work, but with a lot of input from, I guess, what we could call the wise pagans, right? And you did that in Man of the House and in The Household and the War for the Cosmos. So what role do their works and their ideas play in this book in particular?
Well, a supportive role, but I think essentially, you know, a very fundamental role. I think, you know, the Apostle Paul notes that marriage, for example, is something held in honor by all. So this is not exclusively a Christian or Jewish practice. And so with common grace, you know, when we think about common grace, often in the Reformed tradition, we think of it strictly in terms of restraint, you know, holding back evil. But I think that there's a positive role as well. I think that sometimes, you know, people refer to the natural law to talk about the more positive aspects of you know, sort of a natural theology, I suppose you could refer to it as. But what we see with you know, both Christians and pagans in the first century is that they were on the same page about a lot of stuff, and they both would be appalled at the current state of affairs in our world today. So when I look at the, you know, the ancients, people, as I noted, like Aristotle or Xenophon, I'm doing so with a critical eye, acknowledging that there are things that they don't know, but there are things that they knew that early Christians agreed with. So, you know, if you had handed the Apostle Paul and Seneca copies of Oikonomikos, the only places that they would probably disagree would be with relationship to who's on top in terms of the cosmic ladder. In terms of, you know, beneath that, there would be a lot of agreement. So with those things in mind, you know, I was able to work with those sources, you know, in Household and War for the Cosmos. I do a lot with Virgil's Aeneid and contrast that, you know, that epic with a different epic, the Bible, and in particular, the Household of Abraham. But anyway, so there's a lot to work with. And because I come at things with that angle of vision, I'm able to, you know, I'm not like, proposing to anyone that I have some unique insight. I think of myself more as a kind of an archaeologist of ideas. Somebody's kind of bringing forward to our world today wisdom that was taken for granted once upon a time.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful job, in a sense. Be careful the term I use here, but sort of synthesizing that and showing the wisdom and how it parallels and, you know, how we can benefit from both. And of course, you know, coming from a classical education context, I mean, that's something that we strive to do regularly. But it was particularly fascinating seeing you do that in relation to the household and those duties and responsibilities there. Now, you're also a pastor. I am as well. And I know that your desire, as mine would be, is to see the things that you've written about put into practice, right? To see marriages improve, to see parent-child relationships strengthened, to see households built up and congregations strengthened. So what advice, given how much time and energy you've invested into thinking about the household and the duties that we have to one another in our households, what advice would you give to particularly to fathers and husbands who are listening? Where should they start in strengthening their own household? So taking this from the big picture down to the individual responsibilities.
Right. Well, I think the two books you mentioned, Man of the House, is kind of more the bottom up book. And it's dealing with, you know, the practices, the virtues, the young man. The original title of the book was A Young Man's Guide to Building a House, but the editor thought that was too blasé. He wanted something kind of to catch people's attention and maybe raise their hackles. So I said, well, how about Man of the House? And he said, perfect. That'll drive the certain people crazy, and the people who want to read the book will pick it up. So that's kind of a ground up approach where I talk about various things that a father and a husband as head of house need to be thinking about, you know, things like justice. Well, let me just play that out a little bit. You know, when you talk about households as institutions, first of all, in our culture, the word institution is a bad word. You know, it's like something we're not supposed to be celebrating. It's where it's all about relationships and psychology for us. But an institution is something that is instituted. And because it's instituted, it provides us with a framework within which to relate to other people. And so within that framework, a head of house has to be aware of certain things. And if it's an institution that's actually doing something productive, you've got to have certain things. One of those things is justice. So how does a father secure justice in a household? We'd like to say, well, love just is all you need. Well, no, you need justice too. You need to be, now maybe a better way to put it, or maybe a way that's more palatable, is you could talk about fairness. Mm-hmm. But fairness is kind of a watered down way of talking about justice. So I stuck with the word justice. Yeah. So, you know, that's one area where I would encourage men to, you know, to sort of think about themselves within the framework of the institution as the party who is responsible for executing justice in the household. Kind of like Harry Truman, the buck stops here. Doesn't mean your wife doesn't execute justice or isn't concerned about it, but there is a kind of a bottom line responsibility that someone has to shoulder, right, to execute justice. So now what does that look like? And so that kind of gives you an example of how I go about kind of the ground up approach in Man of the House. Household and the world for the cosmos is intended to place the household within a larger sort of metaphysical structure, and show how the household relates to the eschaton, for example, particularly as Paul is addressing the subject in Ephesians. We see in marriage and the one flesh union of a man and wife, it's a mystery, Paul tells us. And you could tell as he's addressing the subject that he almost wants to sort of get away from practical matters and just get into the mystery itself. But then he says, oh, and by the way, let's get back on point. You know, a husband should love his wife and a wife should respect her husband. But what you have there is a picture of the end of the world, you know, in the relationship of a husband and wife, Christ and the church. And so what I tell people, young, you know, couples that I'm counseling in premarital counseling, is that, you know, your household tells a story. Either the story is about you or it's about the meaning of the world. So if it's about the meaning of the world, then you have some roles to play.
Right.
If it's just about you, then it's all about negotiating and trying to get what you want, you know, and well, giving the other person what they want without costing you too much and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, it's hard to boil all those things down into a, you know, 20, 30 minute podcast, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about this because I love the book. And I hope it gains a far, an even bigger readership. So make sure to get a copy of The Household and the War for the Cosmos, by C.R. Wiley. It's available from Canon Press, and also check out Man of the House and The Purloined Boy. I didn't give you much opportunity to talk about that one because we were focused on your books about the household, but do you want to briefly give an elevator speech about The Purloined Boy?
Sure. I guess you could say that it's a mashup of The Republic, Plato's Republic, and R.L. Stine. You know, okay. And maybe people wouldn't remember R.L. Stine, but basically, it's kind of a dystopian kind of thing, and it was a lot of fun. I was actually interviewed when it originally came out by a woman who has an institute at the University of Washington on its philosophical sort of undertones. So I taught philosophy for about a decade at the college level. So I can never get away from it. So it kind of works itself out into that. But it was a lot of fun. And the second book in the series is something I'll pick up on pretty soon. I've got a third book in my household trilogy, you could say, that I'm just wrapping up. And when that's done, I'll get back to the young adult stuff.
All right. Excellent. So any idea when that third book is coming out?
Well, I guess you could say it's a pretty weird way to finish the trilogy. It's entitled In the House of Tom Bombadil. And it's my sort of reading of Bombadil as Tolkien's understanding of the exercise of dominion. And Bombadil is sort of the personification of just dominion as opposed to domination, who were personified by Sauron and Saruman and so forth. So the Tolkien estate thought I was too liberal with my quotations. So they sent it back. They said, you know, summarize this. Don't quote so much. So I'm reworking it right now, but hopefully it'll be out this summer.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm glad we ended on that note because I think the Cersei audience is probably just your target audience for such a book. So, all right, everyone. So look out for the books that we've already talked about, Man of the House, Household and the War for the Cosmos, The Purloined Boy, and then keep an eye out for book 3 in the Household series about Tom Bombadil. That's wonderful. Thanks again, Christopher, for joining me on this episode. It's been great talking with you.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Until next time, this is your host, Brian Phillips, signing off. Thanks for joining me on the Way to Fatherhood podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.